I know some people have joined. We were just chatting before the PLC started, and we were talking about when the all grantee meeting will be, and everyone's invited. Those of you who are thinking of submitting, have submitted, used to submit, you might be an alumni or someone who has been on break from this program for a while. So basically, if you're interested in the program, you're going to be invited to the all grantee meeting, and it'll be in September. The meeting is pretty much paid for by cooperative agreement with EPA and HMTRI, with the exception we have working breakfast, working lunch, your dinner is on your own, and the transportation is on your own, and it's in Alexandria, Virginia. So if you could get there and actually even wrap up a couple snacks, you could just get there with transportation. It's great and well worth your while. And it's 1 day of travel, 2 full days of boot camp, and then 1 day of travel going back home. So that's a total commitment of 4 days. But it's well worthwhile because all the EPA people will be there, and all the regional coordinators will be there, and all the grantees will be there. And in fact, while we're on that topic, before we get started here, when they ask you for your proposal to budget your travel, there was a question to that. How do we budget our travel? Well, there's two places to travel to as far as EPA is concerned anyway. It's the meeting in Alexandria. That's one in September. And then the meeting in Los Angeles, that's the LA Coliseum, and that's in December 10th to the 13th, I believe. So if you budget travel, you may have some other travel that you need to budget, but they do like you to include those two travel expenses. After the annual all-grantee meeting is every year, after this next year, and then the Brownfields National Conference, which is a biggie, that is every 18 months. So if you're projecting ahead in your grant proposal, you could plan on that as far as your basic travel expenses, and then adding to that whatever you might need for your grant. So, well, before we get too far, welcome everyone. And we always make this announcement that we're on open mic. Keep that in mind. So and we all have headsets, and they're very, very sensitive. Don't put us on hold, please, because then we'll get your music, and that kind of messes things up. But keep your room quiet if you're on a speakerphone or a headset. And if you have to, and you could mute. Most places it's #6. I hate to say that in case it's different in your community. Most headsets usually do have a mute button, but we just remember that you're on open mic. And we do that purposely to, one, because of we use an economical phone service that doesn't allow us to mute individuals, but also we like people to ask questions as we go along. We always do that at the end, but if something's on your mind, we might as well discuss it at that time. So with that, Heather, why don't you tell us about what's going on in Washington and with HMTRI right now?
Absolutely. And some of it's going to be a few things that we chatted about sort of informally while we were waiting for the phone call to start. But we do want to let you guys know a couple of things. So I reached out to HQ, and the biggest thing that they always want to remind everybody is the RFP is now out. We did provide a link to the RFP in the latest set of reminders that you guys received for the PLC call pay from our listserv. But that is out, and it is due June 10th. So please keep that in mind, June 10th deadline for the RFP. They had a fantastic webinar. Was that May 1st, I believe they had that, that really went through all great information that you need to know for that RFP that is available online as well. And we will push that out. We're also looking at putting it out on the well, where you can easily find that information for that webinar that was held by Rachel the other day. They also wanted to let you guys know and remind you guys that the Brownfields National Conference is happening. It is in Los Angeles, and the conference itself runs December 11th through the 13th. And the biggest thing that they said is they would love to have you guys, so EWD JT participants there, to really talk about their programs and highlight how it fits into Brownfields as a whole, you know, how you guys you know, provide amazing trained workforce for the people that are doing those brownfield work and different things like that. So keep it in mind if you guys have an idea for a session and you want to present a session. You know, the proposal is available up until May 31st online to submit for speaker sessions for that Brownfield National Conference. So you have a couple other things from the HMTRI side that I wanted to share with you guys as well. The all-grantee meeting, I know we're a little bit off of where we've done in the past, but the all-grantee meeting, we're looking at September dates right now, and that has to deal with we're looking at availability from EPA folks as well as some of the different hotels and things like that. So we do have sort of our request out to the different hotels to see what dates work for them, and you know, by the end of the month, we should have a specific date in mind and let you guys know what we're looking at for those. Really, really amazing opportunity to network with fellow grantees, people that work in this field, as well as finally meet some of the EPA folks that maybe you've only spoken to by email or something like that. So if you guys have any questions, please feel free to pass them my way, but otherwise, we'll keep moving and grooving on our end and let you know as soon as we get those dates. But again, we're sort of looking at the 3 weeks in September is sort of the date range that we're looking at. The other thing that I wanted to let you guys know is has to do with the sort of the time slot for next week's PLC. We're actually going to do our annual webinar on that day. So this is May 22nd at 2 p.m. Eastern time, so kind of same time, same idea as the PLC call. So this will actually be a webinar, so you can log on online. And we've got some really interesting presentations lined up for you guys there. It's, you know, we had a spoken with somebody who was a reviewer in the past of some different grants. And so we sort of are finding a really nice list of the things that cause applicants to lose points. So, you know, don't necessarily focus on the negative, but this is a great way to see maybe if there's something in our grant that we need to change, need to work on, because that might be highlighted for an opportunity to lose some points in the application process. Really, really, we're very excited for this webinar. So please remember that will be May 22nd, so in 2 weeks from today, right at this exact time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, we'll run that webinar. Information on how to log on and everything else will go out in the standard listserv posts that we do.
Hi, Buddy Andrews from New Bedford, Mass.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing, sir?
Well, good. You can just remember it'll just be like every other PLC, except it'll be a webinar, and we'll send lots of notices on how to just access it on Adobe. That will be a good one because we've collected over the years the reasons by just listening to regional coordinators and reviewers, what have you seen that makes grants not get points? And they've given them to us and we've jotted them down and we've compiled them and we're going to put them in that list for you. So between today, which we're going to give you some hints in terms of things that will enhance your proposal, then in 2 weeks, we will be talking about these do's and don'ts, and then we'll have one final PLC just on the 5th, which is really kind of too late, but kind of a wrap-up session about submitting these grants. So that's what we're going to be doing in the next month or so. We're also going to have a Connect issue that will come out before the grant is due. The Connect issues are more about techniques, and we've already done them on recruitment assessment, labor market assessments, community assessments. We'll be talking about in the Connect newsletter about your curriculum, whether it's supported by EPA or unsupported, the unsupported curriculum being life skills and that type of thing. So that might give you some hints. Now, all of these things are located on the toolbox. So if you need to go back, for those of you who are new or maybe this is your first PLC, go to the brownfields-toolbox.org to look at past issues of the PLC in a text form or in the verbal form. And in the text forms, we usually include a lot of extra materials that might be helpful. So for those of you who are new and want to read the notes from previous PLCs, just go online and start thumbing through that. One other thing, when Heather mentioned about the request for presentations at Brownfields, we would like to feature the grantees in addition to what EPA would like to feature them, but we're going to have a booth at the convention, and we're going to be inviting all the grantees to bring any materials they might have so that we could share the booth. It'll be basically environmental workforce development job training booth rather than necessarily a promoting HMTRI. So we really want to, we'll be encouraging that. But in that same light, we would like to develop a panel, and that panel would be grantees and success stories. And if you're thinking of going, and usually these panels are, 20 minutes per presentation, and we'd maybe have four or so presentations. So if you're thinking you're going to Los Angeles, and even if you think you may not, or if you get the grant and you're going, just when you get the PLC notes, then just say, I'd be interested in being on the panel if I can make it. You're not committing it to anything. It's just saying we want to get a group together, and we'll submit a panel discussion to EPA for consideration. And then, of course, if you want to do your own, you could also do individual presentations. And it's always a nice – we always usually do an HMTRI presentation, but it would be good to hear from all of the grantees. Well, before we get too far into this, I'd like to ask you, we've had webinars, we've had often asked questions. Have any of you got some questions that are kind of in the back of your mind you're not sure about in terms of this proposal? Anything that concerns you about it, or questions that are really haven't been presented very clearly by EPA or by us? Anything that you all could think of? I've got a few, if you don't. One of the questions that seems to come up is about leveraged funding. And the question is does that leverage the courses, in particular, here's an example where someone's getting some leverage money for carpentry courses, not environmental, but they're carpentry courses. Can we do that? Are we going to be doing something wrong in terms of the guidelines? Because the guidelines say the EPA money specifically has to be used for environmental remediation courses, and there's that list of the particular topics, primarily hazardous waste, solid waste, some money for wastewater and that type thing. But you could teach anything if the money is donated to you or if it's leveraged. In other words, you definitely would want to get someone to do life skills. You might get a bank to support some training, either in kind or just give you money to do some financial awareness training. You might do some anger management. So there's a lot of things. But you might do carpentry, or you might do air training, which isn't covered by this grant. But as long as it's leverage training, and the grant application, there's a place for what you're going to use federal money for, and that you have to be in line with what they're asking for. But then there's the leverage funding, and that you could teach anything you want. You could teach yoga lessons and anger management and anything that would enhance your program. So keep that in mind in terms of that particular thing. There was another question about fees. Can we charge for, say, 1910, 120, HAZWOP, or some of those? And surprisingly enough, you can, but it's really kind of discouraged. If you collect fees for anything, it becomes a programmatic source. It's like you're collecting money for the U.S. government. It has to be put into the program, and it has to be very carefully defined. Almost all the programs do not collect fees. I would say they discourage it. It makes things a little more complicated. You're getting a grant to provide these particular courses. Now, you may have other courses that you collect a fee on, and if it's leveraged or if it's outside the grant, you can do whatever you want. But we're talking and segregating these EPA courses, and that you have to keep separate. And if you notice the guidelines, they do separate them very, very carefully. So if you want to keep in mind that the grant supports recruitment, assessment, training, placement, and tracking, and in the specific areas that they're talking about, primarily solid waste, but also some money for wastewater, for there's a list of other courses there that you can teach. The thing that gets people confused sometimes is there isn't a lot of money allocated to some of these. Wastewater's only about 40,000. Some of these are as low as 10,000. What they're basically telling everyone is don't base your whole program on, don't, for example, just have a wastewater program, but instead have a wastewater awareness. So your main programs are going to center around the $3.9 million. The solid waste, hazardous materials. And then you're going to be teaching these other courses as more of awareness. They could still get jobs in those areas, and it's good to provide awareness training. You just don't want to make sure that here we are, we're going to focus strictly on wastewater, or we're going to strictly on integrated pest management or something. So you want to be careful with that, because they have the ability, if they run out of funds, they won't be able to fund it. And then what they'll do is just take that off your grant. So you just don't. And here's another issue that we talked about over the last week or two. Say you have an employer and they say, I need people. He's a prime employee. I need people, but they need this type of training. And it's not necessarily on there. The trick is to write your grant as, again, a hazardous material. There are a lot of things that are hazardous materials, and you can make it a hazardous materials, but include those hazardous materials may be radioactive, or those hazardous materials may have a certain chemical in them or something that would be included in that training, but it's primarily a hazardous materials course. And that, so when you're filling out those forms, you want to orient your training towards those items that they're getting the most of their funding from. Well, one of the things we wanted to do today, and these are going to be talking, we're going to be talking about some of the things that take a lot of time, but if you include them in your proposal, it's going to push you up in the rankings. And it's not something they talk about. They mention it sometimes, but they really don't talk about it. But we find that grantees that write proposals that have these things in them are looked at special, because not everyone does this. They take a lot of time, and they're difficult, and you may not be able to do all of them, but maybe you could do one or two or some of them. And I'm going to start off, when we've talked many times about the mayor's office, when we talk about the political side, there's two things. There's the mayor's office that's non-political, government agencies, and then there's the mayor's office that's political. And we're going to talk about both of those. In terms of the non-political side, you really want to guide yourself. You want to talk to government. Now, it may not be the mayor. It may be a county commissioner. It depends on what your target community looks like. But if you go to the mayor's office, you want to, and in every one of these cases, premise your inquiry with, we don't have the grant yet. We're applying it June 10th. We would like to include you in the grant. Of course, this is all conditional on getting this grant. Now, and then they're going to ask, well, what are the chances of getting it? Well, you know, we got $4 million at $200,000, so we got 20 grants. And how many applicants will be? Well, we don't know, because this is a special year. I would think your chances might be 1 in 4. We might get deluged with grants, but that would be 80. 1 in 3 in the past, it might be 60, maybe 50, 60, 70 applicants. It will be more this year. So if you say, well, 1 in 3, 1 in 4, but we need to line up. It's because it's very competitive. We need to line up our support now, and we would like your help. And you want to go through a whole list of departments in that office, and it may not be the mayor, but it may be his staff or staffers who can give you a rundown. The fortunate people are those who work in city government, because they already know this, but many of the grantees or applicants don't. What in city government is applicable to a job training program? That's the question you want to ask. Community development, health and human services, Department of Commerce. Some of these are things you might not think about. Department of Labor, we mentioned Health and Human Services. there may very well likely be an Office of Brownfields, an Office of Planning, City Planning, Office of Communities. What you want to do is get a list, go down the list and find out what offices may intersect in any way with your program. But you need to get contact information when you do that. Now, who do you talk to? Well, you start networking. You start probably, again, I start high. Go to the mayor's office, a staffer who knows city government, and say, oh, yeah, you need to talk to city planning. And a lot of these things will help you in answering the simple questions in terms of labor market assessment, in terms of community assessment, those types of things. So this is going to help you through the entire grant. But you want to get who they are and names. And then you want to find out who of these offices can help you. And also, to be honest, who in these offices, which offices are going to make your grant look good? You definitely want to find out, is there someone in charge of the brownfields? When we say you need to connect with brownfields, it might be difficult to find out the individual contractors or whoever are working on brownfields in the area. But if you go to the office, if there's an office of brownfields, or it could be an office of environmental affairs, they would say, oh, yeah, we've got brownfields here, there, and there. And they might even give you the primary contractor's name, which would be great if you could do that because it'll help you later. So, again, you're constructing a list of partners in government. And, of course, they're going to talk about the WIB, the Workforce Investment Board. That might be a countywide, but they'll be familiar with it. And, again, names of who you could contact. Then, everything I'm going to be talking about today is outreach. You need to start going down that list and calling those people up. Depending on how important they are to you, you may have to meet with them or at least talk to them over the phone. And you want to, whenever you think it's going to embellish your proposal, you need to get their names and ask for their help. In some cases, you may ask them to be on your advisory committee, depending on how those conversations go. I love larger advisory committees, the better. And you may even have two advisory committees, but for different reasons. But you want to have them, and you want to have them before you submit your grant. After the grant, it does you no good. It does you a lot of good for your program, but it does you no good in getting your program. You don't want to say, well, we've got someone from the WIB. We've got this and that. We have a representative from the WIB attending our first advisory committee. And if you can have a meeting before you write the grant, this is what you need to say. And everything I'm saying, you need to write in the grant because they won't know and you won't get credit if you don't. We had an advisory committee and these are the people who are on our advisory committee when you give us the money. So you're saying, we're up and running. Those of you who already have grants have an easier job of this, but you may have to build it up a little bit. And you may have to have an advisory committee before you submit your grant. And there's some other reasons that we'll talk about in a little while, what you want to do there. So we're talking about the mayor's office governmental agencies, and we've talked about the WIPs in the past and how to approach this. The political side is something that nobody likes to say they do, and really it's one of those things that it could work against you, but you want them to work for you. And what you want to do with city council, you want to get in touch, and again, most of this will probably be staffers, with your state senator, your congressman, your local representative, city council member is really important. And what you want to do with them is what I'm telling you to do with everything else, where I just wanted to let you know that we're submitting a grant to EPA, a $200,000 grant. We need your help. If it's possible on how the conversation goes, could you announce this in city council? Can you announce that with this, your organization, and this is going to help you for other reasons, whether you get the grant or not, such and such organization is submitting a grant to EPA for $200,000 over 2 years. It's going to be very competitive, but they would like your support. If you could help them anyway, here's the person you need to contact. Don't feel that you're too small to not be mentioned in city council. Again, what you want to do if they say, sure, we'll do that, you want to document it and you want to include it in the grant. that now we're only a month away from when your grant's due, so some of these things may or may not be possible. But if you can do that, do it. Same with your state senators, bring them on board. Again, FYI, this is for your information. Don't feel, you've got to go into this feeling you're going to get the money, but you always caveat it. It's going to be competitive, but we're going to go for this. There have been instances where people have not gotten the money, but they got money from somewhere else because they did such a good job in presenting their case. Oh, we would like to do this anyway, even though you didn't get federal money this year. We're on board, either for the next time or even maybe for now. We could work at it with this other department. So there's the governmental side, and then there's the political side. Later on, you'll be talking to these congressmen. When you get your first graduating class, they may be calling you and say, can I come to the graduation? Can we have a photo op? A state representative, particularly if there's a city council member, you definitely invite them to the graduations. They may come to the introductory first class to show they love the photo ops, and it gives them a chance to participate in your program. And again, always document. I'm going to be repeating this over and over again, because if you don't document, it's like it never happened in the grant, as far as the grant's concerned.
Hey, Mike, can I ask a question?
Sure.
On advisory boards, you know, out here in New Mexico, it's kind of hard because of distances to get people together. So I use my partners and I send out like a letter, you know, an email every 6 or 7 weeks to get their input and advice. Can that count as an advisory board, or does it have to be an officially with a, you know, established advisory board with, you know, meetings and all that kind of stuff?
You can do a conference call just like this. You can do a conference call advisory meeting, but get names and who they're from. And you can say we had 3 meetings or 2 meetings or, you know, a meeting. You're right. It's for everyone, it's difficult. But if you could say we, in lieu of a presence phone call, we're going to have a conference call. And these are the people attending. And at some point, you will be having in face-to-face ones. But as we get closer, this is going to be more and more difficult. So you could do conference calls. You could do conference calls with your partners, too. In fact, the better, to the extent that you can do group conference calls, but you have to make sure you annotate who's there and who they represent and when you had it, definitely. And that's not a bad idea, really.
Well, I was just thinking because, you know, distances are just, you know, it's 1 hour to 2 hours.
Right.
And schedules are crazy. Everybody's busy. And right. So, okay, thanks.
Now, while we're on this topic of advisory boards, who do we get on the advisory board? And ideally, under a perfect world, you have your partners, which are pretty obvious. But who are those partners? Well, ideally, if you can get some contractors on there. Contractors, two types of contractors. The ones that are the employers, these are contractors who are doing the work, even though they may not even have the job yet. But there are people who do remediation work in the area. There may be whoever you think you might be going to for placement. It might be a local representative from Aero. It might be someone, a local firm that you've got. You might be a headhunter. You could always get them on a conference call or on an advisory board, a manpower firm of some sort. The other type of partner or advisory board member you want to get is a trainer. Now, that trainer, and we're going to talk about that in a second, that trainer may not be on board yet, but you want to bring, it might be a community college, it might be a consultant. He's going to be helping you decide what your courses cost. And we got to talk about that in a second. Whenever you're going to have to put down not only the courses, what does it cost for HAZWOP or 1910-120? What does it cost for OSHA 10? If you bring them on your advisory board, you can get all that information. Now, you have to make it clear you don't have the job and you don't have the work. We're putting together a grant, and we're going to have to go out for bid. Now, what I'm going to say in a second, I'm coming off this topic for a second, if you can get your contractors lined up before you submit your bid, go for it. In other words, you're going to tell me, I don't even have the money. I haven't even written a grant. And you're telling me to send out bid for a contractor. Yes, that's what I'm doing. You go out, and again, you could do an RFP or do it in even less formally, try to get three bids. You need to get three bids for federal contracting regs. And put down your courses. You can have them submit an RFP. In fact, this could help you with your grant in determining the cost of these courses. When you likely to schedule, everything that you're asking for is contingent on two things. It's contingent on you getting the federal funding, and it's contingent on scheduling. So in other words, you have no obligation, whatever they do for you or information they provide, there's no quid pro quo. They are submitting an RFP to get, and it could be the estimate of these courses. They could do all your work for you. Estimate of the courses, how long it would take, whatever particulars they submit. And again, it's very important that you say you are not on board. You are not. This is only contingent on that. Now, you can actually bring them on board if you want. And this is this other approach where you actually bring them on board. You make the competitive bid and you choose a contractor. But again, it's contingent on you getting the grant. And now what we're saying here is if you have a contractor on board already, and these are people who have grants already, usually have a contractor on board or consultants on board, you can then use their experience and use you've essentially brought your contractor on board. You just don't know if you'll be able to fund him. So you can use their experience. You can use their training, knowledge, and abilities. So that's very valuable for people who already have someone on board, a trainer or community college or whatever. So they've already been vetted per federal regulations, and you're able to include them in your grant. So let's go back, regress here, and go back to advisory boards. So we've talking about if you can get your trainers, your contractors who will contract to you, employers, of course, anyone that's in government you want to bring on board. If you could ask them to, say, attend the first meeting, whatever meeting however that meeting takes place, to participate. It could be someone that's associated with the Brownfields programs, not the job training, but the ARC or the MAC programs, the multi-purpose and assessment and cleanup programs. You can get, ideally you get someone on board there, someone from the WIB. So you want to get a community person. And that's really important because one of the dings and one of the compliments is you're involving the community. It may be a pastor. It may be, they don't have to be necessarily the state representative. They could be a pastor in your community group. And you have to spell that out very carefully, what their position and who they represent when you start talking about your advisory board. Because they're going to be looking, do you have an employer? Who's your trainer? Who is providing you with leverage funds? You don't have anyone in the community here. Well, what are you avoiding? You know, you're going to build it and they will come? Not true. Who do you have in your community that's a pastor or an influencer in that target group? It may be some community residents that you can get on that board. So you bring on your advisory boards. And that, again, these things, they take time. That's no question about that. But that's why we're talking about them today. You still have time to do that. While we had partners on our mind, you want to lock down your partners. And what I'm saying by locking down your partners is you've got to be thinking forward into your appendix on support letters. Now, these support letters that politicians say that people try to write and send them and rephrase it, they don't work. What you need to do is, what we're talking about is commitment letters, is a WIB who says we will provide the following services to this program if it's funded. This includes recruitment. This includes drug testing, TAB assessment test. We will provide you with candidates who come in. This is what you want from the Workforce Investment Board or the job bank. If there's a bank that's said, well, we could provide some in-kind training on financial literacy, okay, could you tell us in a letter, just an MOU, they call it, a memorandum of understanding, that if you get the grant, they will provide you with in-kind training. And you could use this not only for leveraging, whatever you leverage, you want to get, in fact, you need to get a letter of support. So if someone says, oh, we can do this, but that doesn't hold much weight for the reviewers unless you've got a letter of support in that appendix that says, We will do this. When you get your program going, we will provide you these social services or drug rehab, or we're a utility and we're willing to backstop your program with offices. Could you send us a letter to that effect? That goes in your appendix, and it's serving several functions. In your leveraging section, you could assign. Now, this is a murky area. People ask, how much do I know that providing office space or providing literacy skills or providing financial literacy or anger management, how much is worth? That's fuzzy. It's up, that's a fuzzy area. It's your best interpretation. I don't think anyone's going to hold you to those numbers. It's got to be reasonable, and that's your best estimate of what you think that's cost in terms of dollars. But more important than that is what they will hold you to is, do you have a commitment in a form of some sort of documentation that they're going to do this, whether it's a trainer or some social service organization or another nonprofit that says, and a lot of people say, oh, we'll provide you with these things, and then it falls through. Well, they forget the conversation 6 months from now. So they want those down. That's very important and something that people often leave out, and they say, well, where are your commitment letters? That's,
Mike,
they're not there. Yes.
I have a question on that. Mm-hmm. We're limited to 15 things in our appendix, right? For letters of support. Yeah, 15 pages. What if we have people, offering to help us, and we have more than 15 letters? Do we just list in the proposal and then pick the ones that, and include the letters, in the appendix? Or if we mention it in the grant, do we have to have a letter in the appendix?
Well, it's good to have your major supporters in the appendix,
right,
with the letters. You can also write in there that you have documentation for 20 others or 15 others, and they're available on request or something
okay,
to that effect. So you want to get your biggies in there.
Okay.
And that's probably the most important thing.
Well, that's where, where they mentioned in the webinar, you want it to be tight. If you reference it in the, everything that's in the letters of reference, recommendation is, mentioned in the body of the application. But, we've got, to 15 pages isn't very much for all the things that you're listing here to cover all these bases. You know what I mean?
That's correct. And that's, that's a good question. And I think it's come up before that we probably need to get, the problem is sometimes the letters are long and you need a page. Sometimes they're just little quips. If you could put two or three on one page,
No, they said in the webinar we could only have one letter per page.
Yeah, I think that's come up before in the past. And so you put your biggies on there, and then you mention, though, that you have letters of support from other leverage partners so that it's covered.
Okay.
You don't want to – the ones that are going to give you significant budget numbers that you're having, that you're leveraging, someone's going to give you say carpentry training or whatever it is, you're going to value that at $5,000, $10,000. You want to get that commitment letter of support. But you also, then someone else is going to say, well, we're going to let you use our church for meetings. You might want to say, well, we have letters of support for that. And they're they're available on request, something that covers you that way, so they can't ding you on it. You know?
Okay.
So the strategies we're talking about today are basically, don't allow EPA reviewer to ding you. Don't, you know, whether it's the courses, if you're going to mention something, you link it to the hazardous materials if you can, to the large ones. If you're going to do the awareness, that's okay. You're going to do primarily hazardous materials and solid waste, but you're going to be teaching wastewater so that there's opportunities for people in wastewater in those core and awareness type courses. So that's where you want to go there. Before, of course, we talked about, and those of you who are brand new, we talked about, and I even hesitate to mention, you've got to go through the DUNS. Go back to our last PLC notes, and you'll find out all about that. And it's been mentioned by EPA. Make sure that your submission process is all in order. And the reason we keep repeating this is it's just a double check. You don't want to get to the last week and find out that, oh, the guy that's submitting the grant hasn't submitted in a year, and he forgot how to do it, and he's got to get a new password, and he's got to do this or do that. You do not want to find that out the week or two before. So even though he says, we're good, can you just have him do a test run? And you got to remember that he's going to be the one that's everything's going to flow through. So whether it's you or him or whoever it is, just give you peace of mind that you do all this work for the next, put in a couple man months of work in the next month, that it's all going to be for naught by the time it's time to submit. Well, these all things, they do take time. And I would say any of these that you can do is going to help you a lot, and particularly in engaging your stakeholders. You want to bring them in. And here's another thing that people often don't do. We talked about the advisory committee meetings, and whether it's phone or whatever, it doesn't take too much to send some drafts to your advisory board members or your partners. And what I'm getting at here is a section of bringing your partners into proposal development. It's kind of buried in there. But the question is are your partners, is your community, is your advisory board actually involved in proposal development? And most people say, oh, no, we're writing the proposal and we got to submit it. We're going to dot the T's, cross the I's, we're going to do everything you said. And then I'm going to come back and say, well, did they actually read the proposal? Did they give you any hints or tips? Now, it'll be easier with an advisory board, because if you assemble the advisory, that's going to be the topic of the first advisory board meeting. You're going to say, here's where we're at the proposal. I'm sending you out a summary of our responses or something. Can you look these over and give us some constructive criticism? You want to do that with your employers if you can. You want to do it with your community organizations even to some extent. And then you can say in your proposals that you have engaged your partners, your advisory board, some employers, and the community in proposal development. And the question they might ask is, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, well, what we mean by that is we have sent them a request to review our ideas and to suggest changes to participate in the proposal development. And that's, again, something nobody ever does. But if you do it and nobody else does, that's just points for you and not points for them. So, you know, we got to beat three other people when we write these proposals. So that's what we've been talking about. Well, those cover things, and I know these are difficult things that I talked about today, but the reason we did it is you got a month left. So any of these things you can do that'll help you will be great. And I'm going to summarize all these things in the notes that you'll get on Friday. If you have not been getting notes, Heather, do you want to give them your email address? Oh, okay, she may not be there, or she may be on mute. hkbaloo@eicc.edu.
You got it, and, Mike. hkbaloo@eicc.edu.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. You were probably on mute. You could send her your request, whether it's a question or if it's a question, you can send that to me when you get your notes on Friday, or her. If you want to be signed up to get on our list, just send her that. If you've got a question that we haven't addressed, send it to either one of us, and we'll try to get that answered for you. Any other questions? If they come along, just send them along, and good luck on it. I know it's a lot of work to write these. The thing that gets me about these proposals, and it's good and bad, is if you could write the proposal, you could do the grant. I mean, this is so detailed, and it's a lot of work, but hopefully it'll be well worth your while. So.
I had a quick question about the conferences that we were discussing at the beginning of the call.
Yes.
So is there like a recommended number of people that we send, or like grant staff versus program manager?
Well, we at our all grantee meeting, we think two is good. We've had four and five. We've had four and five, but you know, two is a good number. You get sometimes it's a program manager. Now, if you live in Los Angeles, you might send 20. You know, there really is no set number. You obviously want one, two, three is fine for all of those.
One of our major partners is the city, which has, as you were talking, a development office that does a lot of work with brownfields, et cetera. If we know that they're planning to attend the regular brownfields meeting, and maybe since they are such an involved partner, and we maybe just wanted to rely on their attendance, should I put something to that effect in the proposal so that they don't think that I'm just ignoring that conference altogether?
Good question. You could say that you're planning on, now are you going to fund them, or are they going to pick up an in-kind? Is they going
no,
to do,
like they okay. already have that as like a budget item in
okay.
their city budget. So
you could probably say that they're going to be representing you. It'd be better if you put your own in, if put it in your budget, put one. The reason I would do that is if, as the grant goes along, you can always shift some funds in and out of different categories. So I would probably at least send one to the conference, a budget one, and then.
Okay. I just feel like I'm going to get some pushback from the college administration, who's not going to see a clear advantage to the college for sending a staff member to
Brownfield. the whole thing is it's required, I believe, in the RFP as a condition.
I searched for it after I first heard about it, and I couldn't find it in there.
There's something about budget in the budget section. One trip to the all grantee conference and one trip to the national conference. We'll double check that.
All right, I'll have to look for that again.
Yeah.
Because as long as I have that wording, then
you'll
then
be clear.
I'll just do that.
Some colleges traveling is a no-no, and they just, you have to go all the way to the chancellor to get it approved. You know?
Yeah.
I think that wording is in there, and if you say it's strongly urged by the reviewers that you attend, but I think there's some actual words in there in the budget section.
Okay, I'll review it again. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, well, we're going to continue this conversation in 2 weeks, and it'll be a webinar, and then we'll do one final one on the 5th. So good luck, all of you. I know you've got a lot of hard work ahead of you, but I think it'll be kind of fun. So you all take care now.
Thank you.
Thank you.